The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Welcome back to Mind Pump. This is part two so far of the Joe Donnelly interview.
This is Mike.
Wait, can we not call the Joe Donnelly interview? I feel like I'm going to jail in 30 days. No. This is the Barbara Walters.
Last
special.
Time you're going to hear him on air.
We're not responsible for anything Joe says.
No.
Anyway, so.
Had an actual legal disclaimer?
Yeah, I think so.
I missed that day in law school.
Okay, so so I think we should have a wizard off. Yes. This is a great idea.
We should do this.
No,
wait, we have to fucking do it in a funny hat.
I've heard enough stories already that I can totally see you guys similarities.
Well, let me explain.
In your philosophies.
Phil Joe.
I'm going to fill everybody in. We might have some new listeners who follow Joe who are tuning in to Mindbug. So here's the deal. Adam, my co-host, is a wizard. This guy understands how to pick up women, how to teach guys to pick up,
what it looks like.
But he's got an awesome.
You're gonna say what I told him.
Okay.
He also understands how to communicate with people, and not just how to pick up women. If you're a woman, how to pick up men. Not that Adam's ever done that before, but if he did, he'd be good at it. So he's got lots of fantastic advice on how to do this.
He did pick up an amazing girl, so he must be doing something right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Any girl that's attractive that can fucking deal with his shit.
Yeah.
Holy Christ!
He's got a wonderful girlfriend.
That clone her and put her in a
piece. We do give her a lot of credit.
That's my disclaimer before we start this, honey. So before before I get
I will say that Adam spoke extremely
highly. She will listen to
you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
And I just after hanging around Adam, like, this girl must be unbelievable.
Yeah. See?
I like how Joe did that. He sets the stage.
Like, you know, some people, like, you know, if you meet a good guy, but a guy has an abrasive personality, it doesn't mean Adam can be over the top and all that. That's what makes him great, makes him, like, charismatic.
Charisma.
If I was a chick, I'd fuck him. Or if I had two more drinks, that might happen also.
Right.
But the point I'm trying to make is it doesn't make.
This could be a good night.
He's not a bad person doing something wrong, you know, hitting on chicks and that, but. That over-the-top personality, it can be too much for girls to deal with. They're like, oh, he's handsome, he gets too much attention. But just because somebody is charismatic and someone is over-the-top, it takes a special kind of woman to deal with that.
But there's also, look, women are smart. And you can't just be a good-looking dude that's flashy that's coming in. There's a skill behind it. And I didn't know this before. When we first started Mind Pump, I was ignorant to this, okay?
Yeah.
And since talking to the wizard, now I understand that there's a science.
And you know what? He uses very unique analogies.
First of all, you can't say science and wizard in the same, because a wizard is something that uses like magic.
It's like alchemy. There's loose science to that
shit. Hey, bro, there's an evolution.
It's a bro science.
It turns into science after
8 p.m.?
After your fifth drink?
All right,
after enough chemistry.
So here's the question, okay? And then we'll see what you guys think here.
I'm not losing, so.
You're working out in the gym. attractive girl. She's working out in the gym. She's got her headphones on. She's into her workout. You really want to talk to her. All right. How does this happen? How do you respond?
Go ahead. Go ahead, wizard.
We'll start with you.
Want me to lead out with this?
You're the leading champ. You're the champion.
Well,
so
I feel like it's kind of not fair because I think we've somewhat talked about.
He was proud. Yeah, we should let Joe.
No, first. You do the honors.
Yeah. No,
okay. I've already won this one, so I'm gonna let him try.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You have 25 seconds to answer.
Yeah. No. Okay. So I feel like Joe's at a disadvantage a little bit because we've talked about this, but maybe not. So. You know,
not only you're gonna lose, but you might lose your girlfriend. Go ahead.
No.
I might fuck him.
Go ahead.
I might fuck him.
All right, come on.
I like him.
Who says that you'd be the top?
All right, let's go.
So
I don't know Aqualube.
So the worst thing that a guy can do is to go up and hit on a chick in the gym like that. I mean, whether the girl is there looking for ass or not, or she's there truly to get a workout, it doesn't matter. You being the guy who comes up and tries to hit on her, even if she wants that, like, you're not going to get it because of that. So, you know, and that doesn't mean, too, you don't say hi to her. I mean, you have to talk to her. But when you come up and you talk to her, it's subtle. It's something that you come up and you say hi to her. You don't need to compliment her how great she looks.
So is it a walking by hi? Like, hey, Is it like you're walking by in the gym and you say hi? Or
yeah, it needs to be natural. It cannot be like you go, you can't be fucking doing bicep curls and she's on the treadmill and you drop your dumbbells, go all the way across the treadmill to go lean on her treadmill and say hi.
Doug, write this down, please.
It needs to be natural. It needs to be crossing paths or somehow locking eyes and getting interest that way. And then you say hi, just like a normal person should do when you make eye contact.
So she says hi back. Or what is the signal now? You said hi. What's the signal? How do you make the next move?
Her making eye contact with you. If she looks at you, if she makes eye contact with you, that's the open invitation to say something to her. The problem with most guys,
he's such an amateur. Keep going. I'm just kidding.
The problem with most guys is most guys say too much. Most guys come in and then they want to talk about themselves. They want to compliment her on the way she looks or how great her form is and all that bullshit. And that's so fucking elementary. Like just going over and saying hi to this woman is all you have to do. That is all you have to do because when she came in there, she's already advertising herself. Oh. So coming in there and actually fucking trying to promote yourself
right now.
Joe's like, I'm bringing her.
You guys both should have a breeze.
So
on.
Here's how it works. Right?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you I got to tell you my theory. My theory as to why that works for Adam is because he's Adam. He looks like himself. That's what I've told him in the past. He said, "No, it works for everybody." I said, "No. If it looks like you and you walk up to someone, you say hi, then it might work."
You know what?
All right, Joe.
In the right context. Wizard off. If she's just some like unassuming, normal, insecure girl, that might work. However, if you're in like Beverly Hills or somewhere, you want to pick up like Christina Milian or, you know, Jessica Simpson or, you know, somebody who's, you know, a little more
big time.
Actually has some game.
Okay, this could be out of my league.
You have to.
Whoa. Those are some names right there.
You have to think outside the box. So here's a little hypothetical situation.
Okay.
This is how it works. So she's working out. First of all, she's working out at my gym because I own it. I own my building. And so you have one of your employees announce on the PA.
Write 10 points.
Whatever her name is. Say one name. Or
you do it on the PA.
Say her name is Catherine. Say, Catherine, can you please come to the front desk?
Oh, this is so
we have an issue
fair,
with your car.
Right.
Yeah. And so the person at the front desk will say, hey, listen, this is kind of embarrassing, but your car rolled out of its spot and it backed into the owner's Aston Martin. And, you know, Joe's outside. Can you please go talk to him?
No.
And she comes out. She's all worried. And you just say, hey, you know, sorry to take you away from your workout, but you know, I thought it was. I've never rule. I never hit on women because it's in the gym because it's corny. But since we're standing in the parking lot, I'm technically outside. So. Yeah, I just want to say hello, and I want to ask you for dinner.
All right. Dude, so I think
I'm pretty sure.
Never hit on women in the gym or in your own gym.
I am pretty sure that my girl cannot listen to this episode because we will never be able to go out together.
That was a new level there.
That was a new level, right. And I don't think we could go ever hang out.
All right. We need another question. We need another question.
No, please, God. Let's please save me.
You can't hang out with me?
Yeah, I cannot hang out with you. There's no.
I'm your biggest supporter of your girlfriend. Yeah. She's awesome. Yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Dude, she's like the nicest person ever. She just can't look at a calendar very well.
I want to know the best analogy. So if you guys, I mean, we kind of talked about a couple with Adam, but you know, if you had to put an analogy to picking up, you know, a woman in the process of that, like, what is that?
Like an analogy? What does it look like?
Yes.
Oh, you mean when Adam was
like
saying
we're talking
it was like
about fishes or hunting? Yes.
What did you say, Adam? It was like hunting or fishing.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah.
Well, you want me to repeat that?
Yeah. Let's fill everybody in.
Well, when you're going.
We've lost all female listeners.
I mean, I love that. I love that dating advice is coming from someone who has a girlfriend.
I know
someone who's married.
That's why I feel like you should save me right here, Joe.
Yeah.
Because
I'm not giving any advice.
This is what these guys do to me all the time, which just shows you how great of a girl that I have right now. Because she allows me to come on here and talk about all this.
Well, I don't think you've ever had like a series of episodes like this. So this might be the last.
This might be the last talk. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think the whole process is so backwards for men. Men have this mentality of being so aggressive and like trying to hunt the prey means you got to go jump all over, and it's so backwards to me. I mean, and women are much smarter than what we give them. Okay. I know a lot. I mean, a lot of guys talk.
No, we're making jokes and talking about picking up and this and that. But the reality is,
I'll tell you one thing, if you don't mind me interjecting, thing I've learned living, you know, in LA a couple of years, it's very valuable is, the dynamic of dating and women there's different categories of women, what they're looking for. Some women are just looking for a guy with money. And I've literally, you know, I'll tell you right now, like I do well, you guys do well too. My business partner does extremely well. Young guy, very handsome. And there's been times, I mean, he's worth a shitload of money. And there's been times that women have not hit on him because they're like, how can a guy in his mid-30s that handsome be rich. They're looking for rich guys. And then they find out, you know, he drives this or drives that, and then they're all over him. But those aren't women that you want. Those aren't girls that you want to date. The biggest mistake that guys make is trying to impress too much. Mm-hmm. Women respond to confidence, but not cockiness. The worst thing you can do is talk about, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, or try to build yourself up into something that you're overly impressing. She's either going to be turned off because she thinks you're arrogant, or she's going to feel like she can't measure up. You know, people forget that you have to think like a woman. And a lot of time, most women are, they're even gorgeous girls are insecure. And they constantly want to have, you know, affirmation and feel better about themselves. So being with some guy, we've seen it all on Instagram, right? Like, girls who are really attractive, sometimes they date average-looking guys. Why do you think they do that? Maybe some have money, but most of the time it's because they feel secure being with that guy. Mm. Those are the biggest mistake that a lot of guys make, is trying to over-impress or trying to be over-arrogant, over this.
Even a wizard needs a mentor.
I'm not trying to mentor you to be single.
Are you saying he's Gandalf?
I'm trying to get your girlfriend's cousin.
The second thing I was going to tell you what's badass about my girl, and this is what makes her so intelligent. It goes right on the long point.
Besides
of what
not
he's
reading
saying,
calendars.
Is that she's not the best at reading calendars. What we keep referring to is Katrina was booked Joe's reservations and everything for me. So she handles a lot of that stuff for me. I set her up. And she booked the wrong day. The next day, and Joe gets to the hotel, and he's like, "Hey, bro, they can't find my name." I'm like, "Bro, I know my girl spelled your name right." So I send her. I said, "Well, let me send you the confirmation." I send the confirmation over to him. He's like, "That's for tomorrow, dude."
So you guys have seen the movie Beverly Hills Cop, right? The original one.
Yeah.
You know when Eddie Murphy walks into the Beverly Palm Hotel, where
acts like he already
and he's like, "You have a reservation for Axel Foley?" They're like, "No, we don't." And he's like, "Well," he's like, "maybe you should try Rolling Stones Axel Foley." They're like, "No, we don't." And he's like, "Wait a minute." He's like, "I'm in town to interview Michael Jackson." And he's like, "The story's going to be called Michael Jackson Taking Over the World." But he's like, "They might as well call it Michael Jackson Can't Do the Interview, because they don't allow any N-word in the Beverly Palm Hotel." So I start saying this. She was too young. She had no frame of reference.
Didn't get it.
And I'm like, "What do you mean you have my reservation?" I'm like, "Look under Joe Donnelly." She's like, "We don't have it." I'm like, look under World's Most Awesome Joe Donnelly." She looked at me funny. She's like, "That's not there either." She didn't even type it in, obviously, because it's not true. But I'm like, "Well, shit." I'm like, "I can't believe that there's, you know, I'm in town. I have this business dinner, and I'm trying to get all of this done. And we might as well just throw everything to shit, because you don't want to allow any fucking big Italian douchebags in the Fairmont Hotel." And she just didn't get it. She just was too young.
Right over her head.
I could have been like Beverly Hills Cop. Axel Foley should have been like, "You want me to call the police?" What?
Yeah.
But you guys are old enough to appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So too young, my girl messed up on the reservation. But what I was going to say was is along the lines of what Joe was saying is, I have teased her for so long that, you know, so, at, you know, at, whether it be after sex or after me being the great guy that I am with her, she always tells me all these great things.
Self-promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. She talks, and then, but here's the thing though, I have to self promote.
Like, she gives you like notes, like after me, like
no,
like
no,
sex,
no. She gives me
you did X, Y, and Z.
No. She does. She gives
like
she,
the anal was awesome.
This is her just loving me,
right?
Giving me my love and my props, and this is why I have to self promote myself, because if you ask any of her friends, they know nothing about me.
Oh, she's smart.
She does not.
Wow, your girlfriend really is.
She
on
does
point.
Not share sex. She does not say anything.
Oh,
and if
good.
They ask her, he's got a little dick.
She's
all right.
Good.
Yeah, that's
smart.
She downplays the fuck out of her man, blows him up though.
Yep.
To me, she blows
well,
me up.
We've all learned that women are scandalous. Yeah. You know they
she,
are.
No,
scandalous.
She's smart like that.
She is smart. Well, she's a keeper.
Well, now that Doug has to edit
all of those were lies except for the penis part. But I mean,
that's true. Now that Doug has to edit the complete first half of that episode, let's get into some fitness. Some fitness.
Oh,
stuff.
You want to do fitness?
Yeah.
After all that,
well,
shit.
You know, oh, this is actually a fitness show. Yeah, I saw it says raw fitness.
I thought this might just go dating from here on out.
I got a question for you, Joe. This is off the subject now that we were just talking about.
Is Michael Hearn on steroids? I have no idea.
No, that's not the question.
Might be 50 years old, but looks 28.
Can we say, okay, this drives me crazy. And I saw when Joe posted, I posted, Joe's coming on the show on Friday, Q&As, you know, and I'm looking at his feed, I'm looking at my feed, and at least 50% of the people that left questions were all these questions. And on my page, it was, "I heard he's not natural." Yeah. You know, ask him if he's natural. Ever on his page, it's, you know, "Is Michael Hearn natural?"
Yeah,
so it's like, dude, you guys, It's seriously.
Well, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't fucking matter. But I'll tell you, first of all, he is.
But you know, the thing is, some people, it does matter, you know, if you're going to say you're natural. And I think that
if you come out and say it, I think that you guys know,
I mean, and I can sit and talk all day about, you know, me being natural and stuff. But I think you guys, and I invite you to speak openly.
Right.
You know, you look at me, and when you see someone in person, you can look at their vascularity or lack of. Size of shoulders, traps.
You can tell.
And you can kind of tell. You know, I may be 250 pounds. Do I look it? No. You even kind of gave me an indirect compliment. You're like, yeah, you don't look that big. I'm like, thanks, dickhead. You just told me I'm not nearly as impressive in person.
No, one of the questions that I had was some of the workouts that you post that you go through are just incredible. How long did it take you to get to be able to train at that level? I mean, you're training like 30, 40 sets of long, intense workouts. I mean, give me an example of
So really good question. Yeah. So when I changed my training style a couple years ago, it was purely just because work and business was so stressful. And the idea of, you know, we all learn to kind of train the same way. Mm-hmm. We go in, we do a set of bench, we wait 3 or 4 minutes, do another one. So maybe in the course of an hour, we get, 15 sets in.
Right.
I was just very, very stressed in everything that I had going on. And so one day I just kind of went in and I was pressed for time. So I did everything with nothing more than no time between sets other than just, you know, switching weights or switching exercises. So I ended up doing 30 sets in 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was gassed. I mean, I just, at the end of my workout, I was doing push-ups on my knees. I'm rolling. People looked at me like, does this dude fucking have epilepsy? Like, why is he rolling around on the ground like a moron? But I felt great. I had such like a dopamine rush and a euphoric feeling after. But it's also another one of those things. It's like I was, as a youth, I was very strong. You know, I mean, I was a 550-pound squatter in high school.
That's crazy.
You know, but and before I had my first shoulder surgery, I mean, I did my sophomore year at Syracuse. I benched 515 for 2. You know, but I was a strong guy. Now, we all know that the longer you lift heavy weights, especially shoulder, I mean, you're not talking about deadlifting and squatting, right. But the shoulder joints aren't made to handle that long term.
No.
You know, people always
that's the most common area.
Yeah, dude, I've had 4 shoulder surgeries. They're just not made to handle it. So for me, the other thing is there is still, we try to be as humble as we can be in life, you know, I guess, except for Adam, but. But sometimes in the gym, you know, it's like you have a little bit of ego. That can be a dangerous thing. You know, you can get ahead of yourself. You can hurt yourself. So what I found is that the less rest I used, the harder it was on my body, and the less weight I could use. So I was no longer, you know, taking.
So you felt it was safer to train that way.
I felt it was better for me to do 10 sets of 10 in 10 minutes with 100-pound, 110-pound dumbbells, and try to go up to 150s and do sets of 8 or sets of 6. And, you know, I was always afraid I'm going to get hurt. And what I found is that I'm a busy guy. Sometimes I work 18-hour days. I don't have time to do another cardio session. I don't have time to do all that stuff. So what I found is that, me training at that pace, and I had to work up to it. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't like I just off the bat, I'm a freak doing these workouts. No, it took time. But I was burning so many calories through my training style. I never needed to do cardio. I was conditioning myself that way. And then I started to post them on, this is how my website actually grew. So I started to post them online. People loved the idea of this, Greg Plitt actually taught it to me, was muscle building cardio. And I built a website from it. And people just loved the idea.
So this is how it all started. Then.
Yeah, people just loved the idea of going in and minimal rest periods. And you know, it's not, let me preface, I'm not saying do 20-pound dumbbell presses and then do a set of flies. Right. I still do heavy movements.
I think it's important that people understand that there's many different ways to increase intensity and get the body to adapt. And one of them is lift heavier and heavier weights. And another way to do it is to reduce time periods in between.
Right. Well, that's a great, great comment. It gets to a point where you have to be careful as far as lifting heavy weights. So my goal was I wanted to squat by June 1st of this year. I wanted to squat 675 pounds. I wanted to do it raw. And I wanted to do no belt. I wanted to do no
raw. So raw.
I don't use a belt. Use wraps. Wow. So it would have been raw no matter what.
Right.
But I wanted to do it on film. I was going to take a drug test on the same day. I mean, people would be like, whatever, the drug test doesn't matter. But I just want to do it. I want to show people you can do it. Yeah. I've always been a raw squatter, so it doesn't matter. And I posted videos, you know, in April and May, and I was, you know, I think I squatted 635 for 3 one day. But as you start to get heavier, you know, problems arise. You know, I dislocated a rib in my back. And so it's I always tell people, you know, using a belt, you know, don't use it if you don't need it. However, I will say this. when you get you start using really heavy weights, deadlifting or squatting, a belt is very, very good for you. Using knee wraps can absolutely protect injury. Just don't use it all the time.
Of course,
if you're
not
squatting 225, you don't need fucking knee wraps.
No, I said all the time.
Right. No, I the reason why I use a belt is because
we all talk about this.
When I start to get really, really heavy,
you have to
use my form shifts a little bit,
yes,
it gives me a little bit of insurance. Right. That's the reason why I'll use
so basically, because form deteriorates when you add load.
That's a great both of you. But the way I got hurt was is that dislocating a rib in my back, everything compressed too hard, yeah. And so once it healed, it got put back in place, but it was still a little sore, so I was kind of squatting a little off center, and then I had a groin pull, you know, and it just from squatting, and it still isn't even healed, and that's purely because if I'd probably been wearing a belt, something that had tied my you know posterior chain in better, probably wouldn't have got injured. So there is something to be said for when you get to a point where you start lifting heavier and heavier, you got to protect yourself or back off the weights.
Is squat your best exercise?
I'm pretty good at the seated calf raises. Decline bench sit-ups. I mean, I don't know.
Stupid.
Are you a good puller? Can you deadlift quite a bit too?
I used to be. I don't deadlift ever since I had this AC joint surgery.
I see it
right here. So basically, when they had to go in, that ligament that holds the collarbone down,
right?
When it tore, the collarbone came through the skin. So they had to ratchet down. Basically, what they do is they drill a hole, and they put a piece of wire through it, and they ratchet down.
Okay.
And they're like, no more heavy shrugs, no more.
Oh, so no heavy downward pulling.
Yeah, I mean, so I can't. So if I'm gonna take my shirt off, and I'll show you, but I don't even. They're like, they didn't want me to even hold any weights in my hand over like 200 pounds. So I shrugged for a while, did some deadlifts like 405.
Yeah.
But if you look, you can almost see through my shirt. See the bump
yeah.
I have.
Yeah.
That's purely because the shoulder joint is separated from holding too much weight in my hands.
Oh wow.
So yeah,
well, with a 600-pound deadlift, I mean, you've got you could. I mean, it had. Let's say you didn't have that injury. You're looking at a 700-pound deadlift.
Yeah, I mean, I did
it without that injury, right?
Yeah, my junior year at Syracuse or sophomore year at Syracuse when I was strong for my shoulder, I think I did 645 for like three.
So
the best I ever did.
Here's something I've noticed about natural, you know, natural athletes or natural bodybuilders or people who build.
I know
muscle
where you're going. This is a perfect point for people to hear. Listen up. Turn your radio up. Right
here's
here.
One thing that I've noticed. When I see guys who are natural, and I believe them, they tend to be a lot stronger than they look.
Totally.
And I'm not giving that as a. You know, I'm not trying to be negative or anything, but
it's
for
not
example,
a backside compliment.
No,
it's a fact.
No, it's
no,
a fact.
No,
you look at like Lane Norton, right? Yeah. Lane Norton is a muscular guy, but he doesn't look like he could fucking deadlift weight that pro bodybuilders would break.
You see Lane, listen,
see
Lane's one of my boys. I should text him right now. I'm like, dude, I'm about to hate on you, but not like if you see Lane in like regular clothes. You should be like, hey, dude, like, can you pull my car around front? He looks like a normal person,
right?
Yeah. That motherfucker will bury your ass in the gym.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
And when people try to say that Lane's on gear, I will defend Lane being natural more than myself,
right?
Because you know what to look for. His body doesn't change.
Oh, yeah.
He walks around the same fucking weight, and I just know he is.
Well, that's my point. Is that natural people tend to be much stronger. Then they look. You look at Doug, for example. Doug, he just deadlifted. What was a 405? And you know, he's like a little chump, like a little.
Yeah, but Doug's handsome as fuck, though.
He's handsome too.
I mean, yeah,
right.
Especially he passed Adam, and if I had to go gay for a scale,
right, right.
He's up there.
Especially
why do you think he called him
that
the
skin
spinner?
Is so smooth. Right. Yeah. Come on,
right,
it's
right
awesome.
For him,
especially for 65. Dude, he looks fucking great.
It's like 8 years older than Michael Hearn.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
shit.
On the flip side,
you can
see
put
him
in your pocket.
On the flip side, you see a lot of guys on gear who
they're just
bigger than the strength that
they're. That's the thing that's I think deceiving is when you see people on gear, they're so blown up through the traps and through the shoulders and their arms are just disproportionate. And people are like, man, he should be so strong. And then you see him on squatting on the Smith machine with like 275.
Right.
They're like, God, can't, you know, that's why I posted that post the other day. I'm not taking any shot at any men's physique douchebags that posted videos last week about squatting on Smith machines, but I am in my hashtag when I said that real men squat on Smith machines. That's literally just the worst thing I've ever seen.
Dude, I got busted. Did you see? I tagged you on that one.
Literally
some,
had
you
no
squatted
clue.
On a Smith machine?
No. I tagged Sal on some IFBB pro who went to Olympia on a Smith. He was squatting on a Smith machine.
Was he wearing his girlfriend's tights?
He was wearing a belt, a strap, knee wraps, and he was fucking squatting on a Smith machine. Yeah.
You know what?
He had no clue. Yeah. He had no clue you're even talking shit.
Yeah, he had no idea I was talking shit.
Because he thinks he's awesome. That's why.
Yes. You know what, though? Speaking of which, you said about the wearing his girlfriend's tights. I will say this. I've been in the fitness industry professionally now for 18 years, so almost 20 years, and longer than that in gyms working out. And I have never in my life seen so many, and this is a fucking great thing. We should get into this. I have never seen so many women barbell squatting and barbell deadlifting in my life.
Right.
In the past, you couldn't get a girl near a barbell, you know, 15 years ago because they were so scared of getting big. Now these girls are deadlifting and squatting, and they look amazing. And that just shattered the whole myth.
I'm going to tell you right now, the one thing that's really become awesome from the internet age, and that sounds old saying that, but it's true, like the sharing of information on social media, in, especially in my gym, it's like 3-1, girls out squatting guys. It's unbelievable.
It's fantastic.
And that's why they look awesome. And I try to tell people right now, like, do you want to change your physique? You want to change it for the better? And Lane was the one that really turned me on that, is squat all the time.
Right. He says it best. If you're not squatting, what are you doing with your life?
Right. I mean, like, the end of, like, arm day, throw in 10x10 on squats.
Right.
Like, I literally was telling Whitney Reed about this. The last time I shot Fitness RX last year, I was, like, 247. And Steve Blackman was like, can you get down to, like, 240? And I was like, I'm going to try this for a month. And I didn't drop any of my calories below 6,000. All I did was... I work out 5 days a week, and at the end of those five workouts, so like I have two leg days every week, so the other like three workouts or four workouts, I finished each workout, I would put 315 on the bar, and I would do 10x10, or I'd go 405, and I would go 8x8. So I finished every workout with doing...
But just a light leg workout.
What I'm saying, but even like arm day or back day, and like... doing that compound movement over and over. I was burning so many calories. I didn't dry. I was eating donuts.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I got shredded.
I'll tell you what. And this is great because for so long, women have been scared to just lift weights. But now they're doing, not only are they lifting weights, they're doing the exercises that are the kings of muscle builders. And what are they getting in return? Leaner, more you know, tight muscles. They look fantastic. They get that curve.
I wish men's physique dudes trained half as hard as bikini chicks. It would be impressive.
You know what? That's a great point you just made. Yeah. This is true. I've heard this, and I've heard this from multiple athletes. A lot of the physique men don't even work their legs.
No.
When I see a guy post and say, well, I only train my legs once a month because they grow too fast, what that says to me, dude, lay off the drugs.
Yeah,
you're on way too much gear. Okay, like you're fucking.
Idiot. I have actually the only bodybuilder I could ever think of in my entire life that was disproportionate because his legs were too big for his upper body was Tom Platz.
Yeah,
that's the only guy
ever.
But
the reason, but I was also remember that was what kind of made Tom like he wasn't a top five bodybuilder, but like that was
that made
him so famous, so he kept doing it. Like,
right,
he did it on purpose.
And by the way, Tom Platt's legs today are better than anybody I've ever seen.
Here's the
even
funny
today.
Thing: go to a men's physique show sometime, and all these guys, like you'll see guys, whoever the guy that won this year, whatever that douche's name is, he'll post a picture and be like, didn't skip leg day, and he'll show a picture of like his quads and calves, like cool dude, you're like 5'6" and jacked, whatever. It's funny when they turn around and they all do a back shot. Nobody has an ass.
Yeah.
All like, and it's funny when you see guys that are so fucking lean, but they still have a little bit of plumber's ass because they don't have a back. So they have no glutes. You know why?
They
don't fucking squat. It's all leg extensions. Or it's all on a Smith machine. And here's the problem with the Smith machine squatting. So when you squat, you need that natural squatter's arc. You know how it goes like the same with your bench.
There's very little hip extension.
There's none on a Smith machine because you're in a fixed plane. So that stress goes onto your quads.
Exactly.
Not glutes. That's why, like, if I was an IFBB judge, I'd be like, okay, you guys all have no ass. You guys have NASA.
Well,
like,
for those of you who are going to compete in the new division, the new organization, you better do some squats because Joe's going to mark you down.
That's right.
But, you know, I'll tell you this. For in terms of sports, when you're looking at athletes, okay, you can always judge whether or not somebody's strong and powerful by their hips.
Yep.
Do they have a powerful ass? That sounds funny, but
it holds weight.
Especially in football, right?
It's the most important thing.
Absolutely. I was always scared of the guy with the big ass, dude. Trust me.
Say what, Justin?
I was always scared of the guy with the big ass.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's true.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, that is probably the most important thing I've heard. I want to tell people this all the time. I'll tell you a funny story. Like, I was a fucking stud in high school. You know, 235 pounds. No, I'm not going to lie, but I was a man child. 235 pounds, 4'4"
speed. Yeah, I saw a picture. There's actually a picture on your Instagram of you.
I was only 15 there.
Which is why I think people are idiots when they think you're not natural.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like,
bro, 15 years old, you look like a fucking freak.
Here's the thing. And first of all, like my parents lived in Japan when I was 15. I was living with cousins. There was no, and where was I getting steroids from? I had no fucking money. There was no internet back in 1995. Yeah. But anyway, so long story short, but I'll admit it for people. I was a genetic freak. I mean, I returned punts my senior year in high school. I returned like 6 punts for touchdowns my senior year, but at 240 pounds.
Right.
You know, I was just the biggest
punt
returner ever.
You're fucking huge, dude.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing. So, but I mean, anyone I hit, they fell and I scored. Anyone that I hit on defense, they might have not gotten up. So the problem is that when you go in to play major college football, you carry that confidence with you.
Yeah.
So you're like, I'm a badass.
So now I'm at Syracuse. I'm at rookie camp, and you know Syracuse just went 10-2, won the Big East championship, beat Miami, smoked Virginia Tech, Donovan McNabb, Big East Player of the Year, ranked 8th in the country. So we're running inside drill, and I was playing tight end and fullback, and I'm lined up at fullback, and we had this. I was a prep star high school All-American football player, and we had this linebacker named Clifton Smith, who was offered by all these schools, chose Syracuse, and Clifton was like, he looked like Tyrese, but like a 250-pound, like just a handsome black dude, but just like 250-pound. Dude, like Clifton's, like here's the thing. People are just like, everybody's got to be on gear. Clifton's one of those dudes that came from maybe from like a broken home, maybe lucky if he got two meals a day, but God-given genetics. He walked in as a freshman at 18. He was actually younger than me. At 250 pounds mm-hmm. and just a freak. Didn't matter. I thought I was a freak too. So the first time I remember the play, we ran 27 buck. It was a lead play. I'm playing fullback to ISO block him. And the hole opens up and I come back. Clifton comes downhill and I'm like, I want to fucking bury this dude. The next thing I remember, I was in the training room and we were between practices and I was like, what the fuck happened? Like, you got filmed like 20 minutes. That motherfucker buckled me so hard. I got destroyed, got up looking at the wrong way out of my ear, my helmet, didn't know where I was. They had to take me off the fucking field. I wasn't allowed to hit that afternoon practice. Yeah. But Clifton had the biggest fucking ass in the world.
Yeah,
and it's just a different level of dudes to bring. It's like I ran as hard as I could. I'm a 650-pound squatter. Clifton couldn't bench 300 pounds. Couldn't squat as much as me.
Yeah.
And I brought the wood as hard as I could, but some people have that hip strength.
They have that hip strength.
Our best
player forever had that same thing, running back. Nobody could tackle the guy.
It's
through everybody.
People think the professional football players are all on gear. They're out of their fucking minds.
Yeah.
The reason, if anyone could take drugs and make it to the NFL, then all you motherfuckers would do it because you'd be making tons of money.
Well, actually, I even said that on your Instagram.
You said that.
Yeah, because this dude was like, oh, all these guys are. And look, are steroids in professional sports? Yes. We'd be stupid to say they're not.
I'll tell you right now,
I will say this. If it was that easy, all of us, including myself, would line up to risk this chance, take some steroids, and be in the NFL and make millions of dollars. It's not nearly that easy.
I'll tell you right now. It is not as common as you think in professional football. And I'll tell you why. I don't want this to sound racist. I want it to sound the right way. The majority of scholarship football players at top schools are inner city black kids who kind of come from nothing, or they are. I'm just saying, like the kids that are on my team came from nothing, and they were just awesome athletes, and they use the athletic ability they have to change.
Yeah,
their
they
lives.
Didn't have the money to go take drugs.
Mostly kids didn't even have money to get food.
Right.
Stories I heard.
Right.
And you could tell they weren't genetically gifted. It wasn't like they were big and sculpted and ripped. Like I worked out hard. I was a self-made man. These guys were just unbelievable athletes. So I'll tell you right now, especially when I got to the NFL, I remember the first day I went into it was the second day of training camp, the Atlanta Falcons. And I went in, I had a little bit of ego between practice. I'm like, I'm going to squat. And I went 315, went 405. And the strength coach was like, stop. This is the NFL kid. He's like, when you get to this point, you're not trying to add strength. You're not trying to bench press or squat heavy. We're just trying to keep you healthy and keep you on the field. When you get to the show, when you get to the league, nobody's trying to get stronger. They used to weigh us, and they wanted to keep your weight down because they figure lower body fat, lower weight. You recover faster.
You're an asset.
You're an
asset. And if you're an asset,
what a great insight.
It's risk versus reward.
If you get injured, they lose their investment.
Yes. And here's the thing. You got to remember, though. If you've made it to the NFL at that level, you have what it takes to be there.
Yeah,
So now for you to play and be successful, it's understanding the intangibles of the game, the X's and O's, the schemes, and being able to stay healthy and then be able to implement and play on the field and use technique and play with leverage. Adding 10 pounds of body weight, that's what you do in college, bro. Right. Being fast enough to get there, that's what you already done. You've already been judged on your physical characteristics to decide if you could be worthy or not. I'll be honest, man, it was not very common, guys in the NFL. Now, were guys using HGH back then? I imagine now a lot of guys probably are because it helps, you know, prolong their careers. Back then they probably were and stuff. But I was the strongest guy when I was at the Atlanta Falcons. And I was stronger in college than I was in the NFL. And I was definitely the strongest guy, except for one lineman at the Buffalo Bills. But I was still stronger than when I was 20 years old.
I will say this, okay.
Man, that's interesting.
I'm telling you, guys just aren't sauced up. They're interested in keeping themselves healthy and being smaller.
Well, you have to watch this TED Talk that I talked about.
It's a contradiction to a lot of people's opinions, too.
You have to find that TED Talk for him. He'll enjoy it.
Well,
there's a TED Talk that talks about that. I used to tell people, I believed, and I'll be the first one to admit this, that I used to tell people that I believed that the separation between what made, you know, your average person to a professional was steroids and hormones. That's what made them that way. And my whole paradigm was shattered when this TED Talk I watched, and I was like, holy shit.
And the guy that's doing it is a scientist, and he's breaking down how records are being broken, and it's a result of two things. It's a result of better equipment, so in sports that uses equipment like biking and running and stuff like that. But it's also the democratization of sports, because if you go back, you know, at the beginning of football, all the football players look the same.
Yep.
Now you have specialized athletes. A running back looks a particular way. Right. A lineman looks a particular way. The quarterback looks a particular way. So you've got these people who are born into it, and of course then they work hard and whatnot. But one of the points I was going to make is when you move up a level, you're moving into a completely different category. Let me explain what I mean. When you're in high school and you're the best of the best in high school, you go into college, you are now among everybody who is the best of the best at high school.
You're one of 88 guys.
Right. Now, when you're the best of the best in college and you go into the pros, now, again, you've moved into where all the college best are now into this new level. If it takes steroids to get you to that next level, you're fucked. Yep. You're not good enough. You're not good enough to last longer than, you know, a few games or whatever.
Such a great point. You see what I'm saying? And you know enough about steroids is that the one thing they do promote in athletic endeavors is muscle pulls and muscle tears. And I'll tell you right now, the couple guys that I know juiced at Syracuse tore triceps, tore pec muscles, didn't even make it in my class, didn't even make it to their senior year. Guys that were geared up and they were out of, you know, playing above their position, above their weight, you don't last very long.
Well, so
it's not conducive.
Well, the body has a natural set limit. It has a natural limit for how strong and how fast it will allow itself to get, because your body, yes, it will adapt to get stronger and faster, but it would also prevent itself from injuring itself. And anabolic steroids kind of supersedes that. It's like you hack the system and now you're more prone to injury.
Well, anabolic steroids do not change your skeletal structure.
Right.
And it does not change your skeletal structure, does not change your ligaments, it doesn't change things like that. It changes your muscle, changes up your chemistry of your body, but it does not change those things.
And recovery.
And recovery. Yeah. But we've talked about this before, that, and it's like with fighting, when people get into these debates of, oh, he's juiced up or this or that. Dude, if there's an MMA fighter who's 205 pounds and he's 100% natural, and he's fighting a guy who's juiced up, who should be 175 pounds, who juices up to 205, he's fighting the natural
guy.
The
juiced guy, up guy's at a disadvantage.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, we know that steroids reduce your cardiovascular, you know, ability. I mean, your lung capacity.
Well, again, it's because your body, you're pushing your body beyond its natural set point, and you're setting yourself up. Look, I could juice myself up and get, hypothetically, I don't even think I could, but let's just say I could get as big as you, right? I would not have the longevity. I would not have the ability, the athletic ability, because you can carry that weight naturally.
Yeah, your body can't hold that. It's not natural.
Right.
No,
right,
and I'll tell you right now, and what people fail to realize is that when you get overdeveloped in certain areas, like your biceps, your triceps, your chest, that's when muscle tears happen. I can't tell you, you know, I'm not going to name names, but there was two guys I knew for sure that were on gear at Syracuse. They both had two bicep tears in their 5 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's things like when your muscles get overdeveloped, your biceps, and you reach out, they're both defensive players, you reach out to tackle somebody, and that running back goes through. A normal person, your arm's going to collapse, you're going to pull in. But when your arm is so blown out of proportion and so overly sized, it's not meant to be like that. The muscle takes the stress over the tendon, and it tears.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like you go to tackle someone, and maybe you fall back, and you put your arm down, and you blow out your tricep. That's not normal. Mm-hmm. That's normal for someone who's overly dressed.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, there are different levels of anabolic steroid use. If someone's using anabolic steroids to bring their hormone levels up to a high normal,
yes,
that's very different than anabolic steroid abuse.
Right.
Not only it's so different, in fact, that the doses are dramatically different. You know, 150 milligrams of testosterone a week or 100 might be enough to bring you at the upper, you know, natural levels. That is nowhere near the dose that, let's say, a professional bodybuilder would take to gain tons of muscle.
So,
you know, they would take, you know, 10 to 20 times that amount.
So I'll tell you how NCAA drug testing works, and it's very, very, very difficult to beat. They don't test whether the byproduct of steroids. They don't test your testosterone levels, because, you know, what they do is they test your testosterone to epitestosterone
levels.
Right,
right. The ratio.
They use the ratio, the 6-to-1 ratio. Now, granted, now we're in 2015, so I'm sure that there's enough information out that if a guy was juicing, he could probably adjust his epitestosterone levels to stay within the ratio. But remember, back we're talking about in like 2001, Google wasn't even out yet. You know, the search engine we used was like Metacrawler. We had like dial-up internet, whatever. So, I mean, you're talking about college football players. You know, you're on campus. These guys have no money. They don't even have cars. And all of a sudden, they're going to be able to locate some chemist or endocrinologist or whatever. It's going to be able to adjust their levels to pass. And I'll tell you right now, people say, oh, do you guys know when you're getting drug tested? We never knew. We never, ever knew when we were getting tested. The athletic, training staff would call you at 6 a.m. and they'd be like, NCAA's in town. You have 30 minutes to show up for a drug test. You show up, you come down. If you can't pee, like if you say they'd like, don't go piss, but if you can't pee, you got to wait. They would give you apple juice to drink. And sometimes had to stay there for 3 or 4 hours till they gave a good sample. I mean, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, if you look at the stats, there's probably less than 10 major Division I football players a year that get suspended for performance. It's usually for marijuana. For other stuff like
which
that.
Is yeah. ridiculous. Can we talk about that for a second?
With 300 teams and 90 players on each team.
Can we talk?
So
can we talk about getting banned for marijuana for a second? Yeah. Who was it that just got banned from UFC? Was it Nick Diaz?
Diaz, yeah.
Just got banned for marijuana. Why is that even on the list of performance-enhancing drugs? That's to me, that's silly.
To me, there's a difference between professional sports and college athletics. Professional sports, it shouldn't be an issue. I get with college athletics, they shouldn't be allowed to use marijuana because
it's illegal.
Well, no, just for the most part, because these kids are student athletes. They need to not be smoking weed. They need to be going to class. Right. They need to not be fucking getting high.
Fair enough.
And ordering Domino's and chilling out, you know?
Sure.
But if you're a professional athlete,
you're a professional.
You know what? It's getting ear grown. A study just came out. So you guys have heard all the studies coming out with the NFL saying how I forgot what percentage are getting some long term brain trauma from.
Oh, I have CT problems. Totally.
Right. Yep. So
I'm an asshole.
A new study just came out that says how marijuana has proven to treat some of that. So
wait a minute. Getting high will make me less of a dickhead?
No, how it reduces some of the brain trauma and the inflammation. It's a neuroprotectant, right. The cannabinoids are. So
you just made up a word, cannabinoids. That's awesome.
No, cannabinoids are a real word. Yeah. I promise you. Yeah, look it up.
Wikipedia. Yeah. Wikipedia.
But I believe in the future it might even be included as part of a treatment for athletes because of the brain-protecting properties, especially in sports like professional football.
Well, they're doing that, and they're also doing that with testosterone and replacement, and they're making advances with that as far as, like, you know, traumatic brain injuries.
Yep.
There's a couple doctors that are working on that right now that have promising results from that. So it's interesting because, Joe, like, how many times have you had a concussion from all these all these different collisions you've had in your career?
It's
ridiculous.
The question isn't have you had a concussion.
No. I'm just saying because I've had at least five, but whatever.
Well, see, back then, like, you didn't really document it. It started towards my senior, they documented a little bit more, but it was more like, what's your name? Where are you? Honestly, even if you couldn't answer, like, I could have told my coach, I'd be like, listen, we're playing Boston College. It's conference.
You still got in the game.
We're down
right?
17-14. Yeah. I need to go back in next series. They're like, yeah, you're starting tight end. You got to go in. I've had a lot of head trauma from football, a lot from dating Latinas. You know, I mean, it's just. So, yeah, I mean, I think the concussions in your later years are more detrimental than your younger. Yeah. Getting hit with that candlestick holder.
I was just going to say, can we talk about candlestick holders?
No, I'm not going with that.
Not at all. Oh, man. So,
no, yeah, I mean, I would say probably 6 or 7 certified, and then another 3 or 4 from late night candlestick.
Candlestick beatings. Have you ever worked in a gym?
No, never worked in.
Ever owned a gym or anything like that?
I've owned part of 2 gyms. Yeah.
How do you like that?
The gym business is tough. It's the landscape, as you know, is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
Market is so saturated, you invest tons of money. Originally, I bought the real estate and then brought in a partner to rent out part of the space. There's not much money in making gyms. Everybody's like, I want to own gyms. I want to do this. If you're independently wealthy,
please talk
and
about
you
want
to do that, that's great. That's fine. Don't think you're going to make money off of it. It's
Amen.
Very, very tough to do.
Tell people
buy the real estate. That's fine. If you want to run a business now, you want to lease it to yourself. That's okay.
Unless you want a huge chain, right?
Dude, even then you're not going
to
make money.
Yeah, you're not going to ramp up to that forever.
The analogy I give to people, it's like, and I say this because I want to own a gym one day, but I want to own it the same way that like the guy who's retired buys his bar His little bar, you buy it outright.
It's a novelty.
Yeah, you're not trying to make money off of it. Right. It just barely pays for the bill.
And someday I'll probably, you know, buy a gin that's near me, and I'll
that's how they all feel.
And even if I lose money, that's fine. But it'll be a place that I'll go. It'll be like Cheers, but for the gym.
Exactly.
But if you think you're going to invest in the gym and make money, you're going to lose money.
Well, now to be fair, some of the clubs we ran, Adam. When we worked for 24.
Not anymore.
Right. But back then.
It's because we were running them, bro.
Right.
Let's be honest.
I ran a club.
You guys are making money.
I ran a club. Now, granted, it was the flagship.
What did they used to charge at 24 back a month back
then? Oh, a lot more. Yeah. Okay. 45, 50. Yeah. Right.
Now they're charging Dirt. 19. You can go and you can offer them like 10 or 11. They'll take it.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous.
But one of the clubs I managed, because it had been so long, I had a very big dues base. That club was making $3 million profit a year, that one location.
Yeah.
Back then. Here's the future. Here's where I see the future. I don't see the big boxes being the money makers. I see the smaller, studios. More specialized studios.
Well, we knew even back.
Like Orange Theory Fitness, great model. Yeah. Very successful.
My business partner, I told him, he bought into a fucking yoga studio in Santa Monica and Beverly Hills. I'm like, this is, it's cashing out business, killing it. Yeah, it's great.
Yep.
Fucking bastard.
Yep, yeah. Yep.
It is.
The studios are the future.
But gyms, the problem is the equipment's so expensive. Yes. So you have to have 10,000-15,000 square feet, and you got to have $500,000.
At least, and 10,000-15,000 is not even a huge
gym.
No,
it's not. No. You got to have tons of equipment, and it's just in getting enough members in there.
It's $1 million to start.
So certain gyms... And this is doing things off the books. So say if you're like a Gold's Gym in a populated area, the only way you're going to make money is if you have personal trainers coming in and they're paying you $750, $800 a month.
And you got a big personal train staff, yeah.
So they can like, it's almost like a barber rents a chair for
you. Right.
So if you can get like 50 or 100 trainers, they're going to pay you $500 or $800 or $1,000 a month. That's cash in your pocket. You're not putting on the books, but you're not going to make money from memberships. You're not going to make money even from personal training. It's tough because if you're a personal trainer, you're going to be like, wait a minute. You're like, I'm going to make $20 an hour from you, or I can just give you like $600 a month and I can charge whatever I want. The kids are going to be like, dude, I'll do that. You know, it's just a much better business model.
There is one model that we've looked at that seems to be killing it. And I don't know if you've been in a UFC gym. Have you been?
There was one in LA.
Those are fucking sick. Yeah. Especially the ones that they've built. Those are legit sick ass gyms.
That and CrossFit gyms, they do well too.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
But here's the thing though. First of all, it has to be UFC gyms, CrossFit gyms. You have to have a lot of square footage, but it has to be in the right area. Because price per square foot is expensive. I know because I lease this stuff out. So in metropolitan area, you're going to lose money. You're not going to make money. But out somewhere where cost per square foot is cheaper, that's fine.
And CrossFit made it. Yeah. They made the model out of going into these industrial areas.
The warehouse.
Let's be honest too here. You're talking about the godfather of fitness pairing with the fucking gangster of MMA.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that's what I said.
You got Mark Mastroff,
who is the G
of fucking fitness. The first person to ever reach $1 billion in the fitness industry.
Right.
And then he pairs with MMA, which is fucking exploding right now. Yeah. So just that merger alone is enough to float a business.
Right.
It's not fucking...
Didn't the guy who created 24 Hour Fitness, is he the new owner of the Sacramento Kings?
Yep.
Yep.
Because he's from like Sacramento area,
right.
But he sold. He doesn't own 24 now anymore. Right?
No. Actually,
it's a great story.
Yeah. It's a pretty
He was exited on that. You don't want to talk
about it?
No. That's it. We were a part of the heydays of 24. You know, and back in the days when Mark Mastroff owned it, it was privately.
Oh, that's the guy, Mark Mastroff.
Yeah, Mark Mastroff is the owner, and he privately owned it. And Sal was even before me. So Sal was there. I came, and then Justin came later. And, you know, back then it was a privately owned company. He owned it. It was the good old boys club. Yep. It was the place to be.
Dude, they wanted a $500,000 a year like franchising fee.
Oh,
back then. I remember we looked into it. It was like ridiculous.
It was the place. I mean, he was the man. We talked a little bit this in the other episode that we did with you, with the whole, you know, Lee and his vision as far as like paying the people underneath him. Like, he was very intelligent that way. You could be a 20-year-old kid. Come in, and if you were selling memberships or personal training, you could make $100,000 a year.
Bro, I was 19 years old making $120,000 a year back in 2000.
That was the time to be in the business. That's how it should have been.
That was a true sales job.
It was. I credit that to my success. I was 21 years old. That was the ability for me to buy a house in the Bay Area at that young age.
I love how Adam keeps crediting his own success. Crediting his own skills all the time. Yeah.
Right? So
he's patting myself on the back.
No. It was because working for a great company like that. You know, and I like to talk about that because it's so rare to find that, man. It's so rare to find somebody who has it. I loved Mark Mastroff. I loved what he did. I loved his vision. I loved how he built what he did. it.
He also gave, let's also say one thing though, if you don't mind, he gave you guys an aggressive commission like sales model. And we'll tie this into fitness in 1 second, but it's like he basically said, you're going, you know, this is how I'm going to structure your commissions. And there's two types of people in life. There's people that are like, wow, okay, I can do X, Y, and Z, and I can make this, I can be great. There's people like, wait a minute, ooh, like if I don't sell this, I'm not gonna get paid, and and that's kind of the fitness industry is now. Right. If you give me 1 second to indulge, right. So a lot of these, most all sponsorships now are like commission based, and I hear a lot of pushback from people. They're like, geez, they're like, I don't know if I want a commission based because I don't know if I can close sales. I'm like, oh. Is that because most of your followers are fake, or because most of your followers are because you only post pictures in bikinis and thongs because they can't close sales? So if you have 100,000 followers, 200,000 followers, because you post ass shots, but you can't sell shit. You can't sell BCAs, you know, to fucking dudes who's starving in China. You know, right, that's 10 right. bucks. So it's like people who don't have the courage, don't have any drive. They're scared to take on that sales model. But that was part of the reason the 24 Hour did so well is they found kids that were hungry. It was almost like you guys are like young stockbrokers.
Oh my god, that's it.
That's exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it was.
He catered.
All right, I'm out. I'm leaving. Good.
Yeah. All right. See you later.
You know a Seinfeld episode when George leaves on a high note. All right, I'm good. I made my point.
We just talked about that on Mind Pump. We just talked about that on Mind Pump. Justin.
That's how I tell stories.
Justin tells a story. Everyone gets a laugh, then he just stops.
I've walked out of so many business dinners like before the entree. Have come when I've told a funny joke and everyone laughs.
Just get up
and
walk away.
Yeah. I get up and leave. And
okay.
My buddy Jim will text me like, where the fuck did you go? I'm like, dude, I'm like, George, Seinfeld. I'm like, leave on a high note. Yeah. And I will fucking leave.
Dude, does that not make perfect sense? Yeah, it does. Right? Yeah. You're I'm always like, I can't do any better. Forever.
And I'm like, God. And I stuck you assholes with the bill. I'm out of here.
So but it doesn't matter how short the story was.
I'll tell you what. When I was running clubs, when I told you I was making 100, 120 grand a year, my salary
In 1968, that was a lot of money.
Yeah, 1968. Listen to this joke. My salary, $2,000 a month. My salary was $2,000 a month. So it was the vast majority of the income that we earned was off of the production that we did.
He catered to the 20 percentile. Yeah. He catered to 20. You know, with that business, for sure, that business model was the 80-20 rule. 80% of the people made 20% of the money. 20% of the people made 80% of the money, which I loved, which I feel that America should be like that. If you work hard, you are good at what you do, you should be rewarded for it. And if you're a shit butt, you shouldn't be. Well, and if you're middle of the pack, you should get middle of the pack.
Bring back the three-fifths compromise.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Everybody should be given one vote. Those of you that don't pay taxes, don't own land, aren't employed, should be given no votes or half a vote. Those of us that own companies, that employ people, that own real estate, that pay our taxes, that are in good standing, we should be given two or three votes. Then let's see how voting turns out next election. Oh, you guys think that I'm a racist or think I'm politically incorrect? Yeah. Blah, blah. Let me tell you something. If I have a couple companies, I mean, I have 40, 50, 60 employees, and I own properties, and I pay all these fucking $100,000 in taxes, why is Johnny fucking Jerkoff sitting in a house living on fucking government assistance doing nothing but draining all of our tax money? Why is his vote equal to mine? Right. And if you motherfuckers listen don't agree with that, then go fuck yourselves. You don't understand how the world should work.
Well, here's the deal.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what they created it for. First and foremost, they created that because I think – as you move forward, you want to be careful because you want to be careful for things like crony capitalism, corporatism, because we have a government that gets heavily influenced by corporations, which should be competing in a free market. Instead, what they do instead of competing is they use the force of the government to take out their competition.
Right.
And this is not a good thing because it stifles things like innovation. It destroys opportunities for people. So this is why. An idea like that, obviously, there might be a lot of people that will
but
be.
Then it's more about campaign reform, right?
Right. Well, what I will say is this: if you want a government that works for the people, that isn't influenced by companies, by corporations, by big money, then what you do is you have to remove the incentive. Okay, it's just like any business. Yeah. Let's get rid of the incentive. How do we do that? Take the government out of the market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If the government has no role in the market, if the government can't go into
the
market,
landscape changes. Totally.
Right. Yep. Look, let me put it this way. Do you know how much money is going to be raised in this next presidential election per candidate?
Yep.
$1 billion.
Ridiculous.
Where's that coming from?
Where's it going?
Right. The reason why companies invest so much money is because the government is the referee.
Right.
And when the referee is in the game and playing the game, they're the first ones to be bought off. If they're out of the game, then all companies can do is compete with each other. Now, in the past, people would say, we need regulations because we need to make sure the government protects us. And there might have been an argument for that. But now, in the age of information, with reviews and Yelp and, you know, where I can communicate. Listen, a company screws you over, they don't get away with it like they used to.
Right.
It's a very different landscape. Yeah, and today, totally. Right, you remove government out of the market, you will eliminate all that influence into politics. And then you'll have politicians actually working for us and not for these corporations. And then that kind of stuff wouldn't matter. And then, of course, part two, if we just respected the liberties guaranteed us by the Bill of Rights. You respect those, then you're not going to be afraid of this majority rules where you get tyrannized by the majority of America. And if 60% of America is collecting from the other 40% that's producing, you're screwed.
I was going to bring, so you made a great point talking about dinner, is that unfortunately we're in a current situation where 55 or 60% is the leeches of society living off of government assistance or whatever it is. And that's why we're electing the way we are. Now, I'm not saying you should be a Republican or you should be a Democrat. All I'm going to say is this. This is one thing I learned in business, and it holds true to almost everything in life. When you're negotiating with someone or you're arguing with someone or you're debating with someone, the minute they get emotional, they've lost.
Yeah.
Never argue, think, make statements, decide with emotion. You use analytics. You use your brain. So when people start talking about this candidate doesn't believe and doesn't support the church or doesn't support gay marriage or doesn't blah, 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 I'm not going to get too political, but it's like, what does that mean? Why are you getting so upset? Vote with your wallet.
Well, you know,
vote what is going to best the economy at the end of the day.
I'll tell you what it is. Here's the deal. Here's the game that politicians play. They pick wedge issues that energize their base.
Well, because they know there's a certain percentage of the population that's so stupid they're going to side
with
them. They're like, I have no way to fix the economy, but I support church.
So let me give you an example. We just had a horrible tragedy in Oregon with the mass shooting. Okay, horrible tragedy. Instantly, you have one side saying ban guns, and you have the other side saying everybody should own a gun.
Yep.
Here's the reality. Okay, people need to be objective about this. More people own guns now than ever before, and crime, violent crime, gun crime, is down 52% since 1992. It's been going down since then. It's trending downward. So there isn't this strong correlation that we like to think about.
Let's get away from the politics for a minute because we're boring people. But
let's do that.
But the point is this, is that more people own guns than ever, and the violent crime rate is down. And so everybody should get a gun and a YMCA card and rent a fucking book, and we'll be fine.
I'm just saying,
it's like ridiculous. You know, like Obama, he doesn't want anybody to have guns, but yet he wants all these guns to go to Syria to be able to fight people that are trying to fight. Well, we should have those too. I mean, come on. This is the one. If we had a president that had a test level of over 150, we'd be awesome. But we don't.
I go to the restroom for like 5 minutes. You guys are not even that. You guys are already talking about politics and shit. What'd you do?
Oh, yeah.
Is that you?
The
is
wizard you? Left. Yeah. I know. Our influence of AIDS vagina was gone.
I think we've been on.
Stop talking about AIDS.
We've been on for a long time. What do you think, Douglas? Yeah, it looks good.
No,
so we should probably delve into some fitness questions.
Oh, we should.
Maybe.
Are we over
maybe
an hour?
On another episode.
Are we over an hour again?
Another episode.
Why don't we chop this and we'll go to the third one?
Yeah. Okay,
sounds good.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.